Hey there, and welcome to the next episode of Back to the Fire. I'm Kylie Payne, and today we're going to have a conversation with my friends Jeff and Bob, and I do Food Not Bombs every Sunday at 5 Points, and it's actually Sunday right now for me, and as soon as I'm done working on this, I'm gonna go start on a pot of rice to take out there. But anyways, me and Jeff talk a little bit, and then after that, I go and have a conversation with Bob. I met Bob through Jeff a couple years ago now. Bob occasionally comes out to Food Not Bombs, and during the days of Occupy, he would come down and spend time with people at the encampment. Both of these people have had a bit of influence over me, as I, being a young, somewhat radical-minded individual here in the South, see a bit of myself in them. Feel like, you know, we're each a couple generations apart, but, you know, still are the same, you know, sort of kindred spirits. So, I always enjoy getting to listen to what they have to say. And I hope you do too. I think it's a bit curious how, you know, being from different generations, we tend to have different ideas of, you know, privacy and you know, different expectations and you know, how that plays out. And, you know, when I go up to talk to Bob, he gives me several books. I started reading a couple of them, and they're, you know, certainly interesting, and I hope to be able to tell you more about those later.
All right, there we go.
It's a great topic, because I think if you highlight the differences in the city and the country in Alabama, It's just like my conversation with Malik, the guy who works at Texaco on Claremont. And he was telling me about, he went to a good school in Pakistan, but they didn't teach him about the equinox. And so we were talking about that, and I said, well, you're in Alabama now, you know, it's about the same. Pakistan, you got out in the country, they're not going to teach you some stuff. And in the city, you know, I know we don't have agriculture classes here, mm-hmm. so they won't teach us that. But you get a better education, I think, if you're, I don't know, some of the suburbs in the city. But then again, you might go to some country town and find that they have a good school system. I don't know. But it is important to know that in America, it's the city and the country are very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a big difference just between, yeah, like going over the mountain even and getting to the suburbs and then...
Yeah. And I was thinking about it the other day, too, like the same way like socialism and anarchism would tell you you have more in common with the workers in other countries than you do with the rich people in your own country.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a rant the other day about people from certain suburbs coming to Birmingham and changing the nature of this scene we got here, mm-hmm. throwing their cups down everywhere. And I was thinking there are some things that cross over between rich neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods where they're all ghettoized, where they all, if you go into a really poor neighborhood or rich neighborhood, they just walk all in the streets with their baby carriages and play basketball in the street and whatever. And you're like an invader coming through. Like, what are you doing here driving through the neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. But then in other ways, like a lot of the suburbs, those people come here, and I don't like a lot of what goes on with their presence. But country people, on the other hand, maybe have more in common with the poor city people in certain ways, and they know how to act where they're not treating everybody like they're here to be served and we're here to serve them. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to name communities, but certain areas, more people come from there who act like this is their playground, and it should be their playground. It's the great city to visit around here, but a lot of them are disrespectful. They don't tip well. They throw trash around and stuff, and so mm-hmm. you can find different correlations between different communities. And in some ways, I totally get suburban mentality because I lived in the suburbs for a long time. But I don't know. I just kind of wish that people in America could realize, well, Alabama, that we're like Pakistan or Afghanistan when you get out in the woods. I mean, when you get far enough away from the city, mm-hmm. you have all this backward.
I guess all the stuff that's been going on around, like, the 50th anniversary of, Bloody Sunday. And there being, local KKK group showing up and, like, passing out literature and that sort of stuff. So,
yeah, I can't believe they're back. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I can't believe they're in the Birmingham area anywhere. I just can't believe it.
Which, I don't know, I think it's kind of interesting hearing some of the coverage of that, because me and a couple of friends from Montebello went to the Bloody Sunday March, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, and there was a big focus on HB 56, the immigration bill at the time. And so there was a large presence at that. And then, hearing coverage of this year when, there being, a bunch of, celebrities and, including the president showing up for it, and how there's, gates everywhere and all this security, and that's, totally, there were no gates, there was no security when I was there, but there was, I guess, no big names there, so I guess that just feels like it'd be, a totally different atmosphere going into
that's
to that.
One reason I didn't go, because I knew we would just be, cattle mm-hmm. walking around through there. City stages in the old days.
Where was this?
Selma.
Yeah, with Selma. It being the 50th anniversary.
Selma,
and
not during
this year.
No.
Not this year.
No,
they were already, the seats were already taken. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of people there when I was there, but it wasn't 40,000.
Yeah.
It may have been 15,000.
I heard what a great speech he gave and everything. A lot of my friends were very impressed. I don't know. I have trouble respecting presidents. So when you
have to cover so many bases with so little transparency, and the influences that really go on, so it's kind of like the bully pulpit's just kind of a propaganda bullhorn.
Well, what I think is Obama and the Democrats are talking to me. I'm not always listening anymore. But the Republicans, I can't stand. They don't say any single thing that I agree with.
That makes any sense.
Really?
At all,
but
and yet they get away with it.
Sure, I mean,
because they can rile a base.
A lot of people believe in magical things.
I've got
a lot of people believe in religious base.
I was doing a little bit of reading on the Birmingham Wiki and that kind of stuff recently, and I guess I was sort of interested to read about CAP, the local
corporate cop.
Yeah. And so generally I guess I haven't had the best opinion.
Up.
Yeah.
Well, they did okay for us at Occupy. I was never
here you go.
Thank you, man.
Yeah. Well, because, like I said, I was doing some reading, and apparently, back when Larry Langford was mayor, he did some sort of, Birmingham wasn't going to celebrate Gay Pride Week and wasn't going to allow the banners to be hung off of city property, and then, CAP went ahead and did it anyways and, paid for the bucket trucks to go out and put up the flags and everything, so I thought that was...
CAP did?
Yeah. Huh. So, I wouldn't have expected that.
Well, I think there's... they think they're the adults, and I guess being against homosexuality is old and dead, and it's on the way out, and so they want to be ahead of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't conflict with their agenda to do that.
Right. it's okay to acknowledge gay people's rights, but like if you're like,
oh, you should,
Martin Luther King was going to have this poor people's march.
There's no telling the impact.
You know, a poor people's march, that's different. Gay people, you know, as long as they have money to spend in the shops around here, they don't care. But if they're poor and they get homeless, end up on the streets,
it's a different problem.
Different story, yeah.
And that's, I guess, like another thing with like doing like the Birmingham art crawls, like me and Abir are doing that now, and I guess that's like organized or in part like Rev Birmingham is a part of that, and we were talking, I guess, at, you know, some of these meetings or the radio station, like about different organizations we want to try to reach out with and partner with, and or just, you know, announce our presence to and let them know what we're doing, and then you know, that name came up. And then there's a little bit of discussion, and what somebody said was that their general directive is to try to bring people into Birmingham, that not necessarily people who live here, but yeah, bringing commerce, I guess, into Birmingham. And so, like, I guess didn't really see any direct way that we could benefit from working with them. But
another thing is, it's really hard for like
I'm not much into that movement that's going on, because I mean, I'd like to slow it down, actually. I mean, the gentrification is going to be good for people who have money, but there's a lot of people around here who don't have money, and they're going to have to move. So, you know, I was in a discussion, one guy on Facebook saw me posting shit about like, stay in Mountain Brook, stay in Vestavia and Hoover, don't move here. You know, I was just being like a city Klansman, you know, some Klansman for the city people. So I was just, all right, see you later, bye. So I was being a little harsh towards some of the people I've seen around here in the new weekend scene and everything. And my friend was saying, well, who was your rant directed at? And I said, well, I mean, no, he said, well, who was your tantrum directed at? And I'm like, well, it's not a tantrum because I'm in control of my emotions. So I'm telling you, the people that I listed above already, that's what I'm talking about. So he started saying, well, would you call a row of crack houses a long-standing community? And I'm like, maybe. I mean, if their grandparents lived there and then they got kids selling crack out of the house now, it doesn't mean it's not a long-standing community. But anyway, he said, well, some people need to be gone, and this is a way to do it. So I'm like, well, a lot of people who you wouldn't mind having around are going to be gone too. So that's what y'all want to do. Bring business here and chase out undesirables. And I'm like, well, I'm on that undesirable list, so I'm going to end up living in the new slums wherever they are someday, because I won't be able to afford to live here. But I don't want a death penalty if people who didn't kill anyone are going to be killed through accidents and mistakes made by the law. So I'd rather have innocent people walk free and guilty people not. You know, I'd rather have guilty people who are guilty not be killed, if that means that innocent people won't be killed too, you know.
Another interesting thing I read recently was the Birmingham got selected for like that pilot program with the police.
And then
also recently, you know, again, saw on Facebook, I think it was like your brother posted the image of like the Hoover police, you know, like
with
the SWAT
silencer
team. Yeah, and just like them, like, you know, being all tactical. And yeah, just like two very different images. And yeah, just like separated by the mountain.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And the way they look at it over the mountain, there were people piping in on the, where someone, a friend of mine, had complained about that image. And some guy who lived in Hoover said that, wouldn't you want them on your side if you had people that were going to harm you and stuff like that? You know, and I'm like, well, people aren't going to see it. People from outside Hoover won't see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, city people see that as, you better stay in Mountain Brook, Occupy, or Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Don't come here. That's the way it looked like to me.
Yeah.
I'd rather see some people here who everybody, most people have trouble with. I'd rather see them stay if all the other poor people can stay, you know. But I don't see that happening. It looks like to me it's going to just be too expensive to live here. They'll do away with housing projects and things, you know.
Well, they've already moved on that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they could certainly do better than the housing projects that exist. But the idea of having different income levels all living together.
I don't know how that works in this world. I wish that it did, but I don't know how that works in this world. Yeah. You can have whiners, one thing. Just for the start.
Yeah.
Would y'all like to take some of this home?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Some, please. And Nancy left the casserole, take some of that. Oh. I'll take care of her plate, but there's lots of casserole here.
Oh, I don't know. 85. Off and on. I was a merchant seaman. I shipped out of New York. I used to stay with my cousin on Kill Springs Road. She passed away. So I've been coming down here for many, many years, and I've lived here since 85. When I retired, I didn't really retire. They eliminated my job, so I was made redundant. The name of the game under capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind saying like a little bit about, I guess, like where you worked or what you were doing?
I worked for United States Lines, a steamship company out of New York. It was the largest steamship company in the world. There's a picture of the SS United States.
Hmm.
There's another one of it, a postcard of it. I worked for the military, and I was in the Navy from 50 to 53. I went to college, San Francisco State, graduated San Francisco State. And I worked ashore a while, then I went back to sea in the Merchant Marine. Well, I worked for MSTS, Military Sea Transportation Service. I was on troop ships as a civilian crew member for about 4 years, sailing to the Far East. And then I came over to the East Coast in, 70 or 68, something like that, and then I sailed for United States Lines for off and on for 20 years. I worked for Moore McCormick Lines, United States Lines.
So, it sounds like, you've certainly been around a bit. So how do you, I guess, feel like this area compares to, I guess, other areas around either like the U.S. or the world?
Well, every place has its own thing, you know.
Yeah.
You can't make a comparison between Alabama and South Africa.
Sure.
You know, I've been all over the world. I haven't been everywhere, but I've been in most places, a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
I can name them if you want me to.
if you want to.
No.
Okay. What I'm getting at would be like how do you feel like the political climate or culture is here in relation to maybe like other areas?
Well, I'm a liberal, and you know, this is a conservative area except for Jefferson County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's conservative, but someday people wake up to the truth of things, but they're brainwashed.
Mm. So, and
Pretty much so.
Like, have you, I guess, noticed any difference over the years in the, general public opinion towards things? Like, how have you felt like that shifted?
It hasn't shifted at all.
All right.
You know, I don't think it's shifted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jefferson County is liberal, and it's always liberal, and will always be liberal. But the rest of the state is largely conservative. I don't know about Mobile, but I think they're a little more liberal in Mobile.
Yeah. I've not been down to Mobile much, but I know a couple of people down there I've been wanting to get to talk to. How did you get political? Like, what was going on at the time that caused you to start paying attention to what was going on?
Well, I was political for a long time. You know, of course I was in the Navy, you know, and I didn't know much of anything until I went to college and saw some of the world and saw how other people live. You know, I went through, when civil rights occurred, I was going to see. I didn't have much to do with it.
Okay.
I wasn't around for it. I never went through it, so I read about it, but heard about it, but in the Merchant Marine, everybody's equal. There's no racism in the Merchant Marine. Black or white, you're all crew members, and racism doesn't enter the picture at all, which I liked.
Yeah. Let's see. So, I guess, like, what are some issues that you've, like, followed or kept track of here recently?
That's a funny question. Well, I certainly don't like the Democrats. Republicans are controlled in both houses of Congress, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but the Democrats sometimes are much better than the Republicans. But the Republicans are just beyond reality. You know, I don't think they know what reality is.
And getting more and more out of touch with what's going on.
Right.
I just, like, I remember, I guess, like, stories of, like, Mitt Romney during, like, the last election cycle and going out to, like, grocery stores and being, I guess, confused by what, you know, was going on because he didn't go shopping at grocery stores.
Right,
so.
Right. You mind if I smoke?
No, that's fine.
Some people don't like the smell.
And I guess, you know, things aren't shaping up too well for the you know, the upcoming elections either. It's like, I guess I've heard stories recently about Jeb Bush and him being one of the hopefuls.
The dynasty.
Yeah.
I don't want a dynasty.
And then, you know, I guess the Democratic you know, proposal is, you know, hearing a lot of Hillary Clinton. So yeah, it's another choice of Bush or Clinton.
I don't like her either. So I don't like any of them. I don't know any. Well, I like that woman, Warren. Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah.
I like her.
Yeah.
I think she'd be good, but she just says she's not going to run. So I don't know anybody out there that I'd like to see run. Jerry, the guy, the governor of California, but he's too old, you know. Jerry Brown. Mr. Moonbeam. That's what they used to call him. Did you ever hear that?
No.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, is that Moonbeam?
Moonbeam. Beam.
Beam.
It was a derogatory slur against him. Some of the things he said or something. He's an intelligent guy, you know. I'd like to see him as president, but he's too old. He doesn't want to run. He's governor of California right now.
And then I know, like, you know, in the past, when I've bumped into you, you've always brought up or mentioned foundations.
Right, foundations, right.
Could you talk a little bit about why those are so important?
Because they control this country. We're a semi-crypto fascist tax-exempt foundation plutocracy. Okay, I've told you that before.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that line.
You've heard that one, okay. There's a book, Foundation Directory.
Oh, wow. It's a big book.
Yeah. And the people you ought to ask are the people, the foundations in Alabama. Go talk to them. You can look at the front of it. It's all Alabama. Just pull those pages over. And you can just wait. Yeah, okay. Now turn it over. The first section is Alabama. Go talk to those people. See what they have to say. The names and addresses are there. Go further.
That's just
go further.
Alabama.
The foundations run this country. Come to Alabama.
And I guess, like, could you explain a little bit about how that's so?
How what is so?
How, I guess, like, foundations have this power that, I guess, people don't know about.
Well, there's a lot. The trouble with Americans are they're dumb. Mm. It's not that they're stupid. It's that they're dumb. Well, I don't like the word, use the word dumb. They're not, they're intelligent, but they're told lies, continually lies. NPR lies, National Public Radio lies, the news media lies, the newspapers lie. They all lie because they don't tell the truth. I learned in college that not telling the truth is not telling the whole story is just like lying. And they lie. They buffalo the people into believing that we're a democracy, which we're not. We're a plutocracy. Or an aristocracy, whatever you want to call it. We're not really a democracy. That's a joke.
Yeah.
We haven't been a democracy since before the Civil War. We might have been a democracy then, even though everybody didn't have the right to vote. And there was no woman's suffrage at the time. The blacks couldn't vote. Well, they couldn't vote. But we were a democracy, but we've lost it.
Yeah.
The Civil War lost it because all these stupendous fortunes were created. And they rule the country today. The Rockefellers were starting off, and the Carnegies, and so on and so forth. And they're all in that book, and that book has thousands of pages.
Yeah.
All foundations. That's money the workers should have gotten that they didn't get. In most cases of foundations, the money should have gone to the workers, which it didn't. They squirreled it away and made foundations that made it tax exempt by an act of Congress. They rule, Congress rules, Congress sets the laws.
So I guess there, because, I don't know, like a lot of people, or, especially these days, there's, I guess, a lot of talk about, the upset around like corporate earnings and I guess corporations is the word that gets thrown around a lot. But yeah, you don't hear a whole lot about foundations. But I listen to NPR and I listen to other programs, and I hear at the end where it's like this, provided by the whatever foundation.
Foundation, yeah, but they never have a program talking about foundations.
Yeah.
Okay. They talk about everything else on NPR.
But they never talk about foundations,
and the things that a lot of congressmen in the early days of foundations were diametrically opposed to foundations. You can see how undemocratic they were. There's no accountability. They can do what they want with their money. Well, Americans will say, oh, fine, it's their money, but it's what they do with the money. That's the point. It's what they do. They pervert everything.
It's like I remember earlier this week hearing a story about Roy Moore's son has gotten into a little bit of legal trouble. He got pulled over and had some, controlled substance on him. And people were saying how, he's like a really like, not a good, not an outstanding citizen, I suppose. His father has put him in charge of a foundation that they own. And so he's just sort of like the figurehead of that organization, but he doesn't really do much, is what people are saying, is that that's just a title or a position for him to occupy.
One of the best guys in reading about foundations is G. William Dunhoff, Foundations and Public Policy. I don't know what's here. Oh, here it is. Who Rules America? Power and Politics in the Year 2000. That tells you all about it. Who Rules America? He's a sociology professor at University of California. I forget, not Berkeley, but you ought to shut that off so I can, when you're reading like that.
I can pause it and go in and edit it.
That's a terrific book.
Yeah.
Huh?
I'll have to look at it.
But I won't give you that one.
Oh, okay. Let's see.
It's a reference book.
And I guess like another thing that, sort of been noticing is like there's the information for a lot of this stuff is out there. It's just it's not advertised.
The information is there. That's why I say semi-crypto, half secret. the information is there in books like G. William Dumhoff, but you got to know where to look. You're not going to find it in newspapers or magazines or NPR. Now, the professors know it because they get grants all the time. I mean, every college gets grants. They know all about the foundations. And nobody blows their whistle on them. Many times, I think, talking to a guy like you, you'll get involved in foundations somehow because there's money there.
Well,
and you won't do anything about it. You know, you won't say it's wrong.
Well, that's like...
Because you get bought. Everybody's bought in this country.
That's, I guess, you know, I've seen, like, what you're talking about, like, as far as... Because I have worked with some not-for-profits in the past, and then, you know, they get their money through, yeah, grants and writing for grants, and then, you know, getting approved for that and accepting that money, yeah, does tie you into their network, and you have to, you know... work within their parameters at that point.
Toe the line.
Which is one of the things I've always enjoyed about doing Food Not Bombs with Jeff is because there is no...
No foundation.
Yeah, it's just, you know, grassroots.
But usually organizations like Jeff's are bought out eventually. Mm. They're bought out, you know.
Yeah, well, I can certainly see, like, I don't know, like... The way I feel about it is it's just a couple of us that get together and do this right. on the weekend. And so if you know, a couple of us like either moved away or got a different job, like couldn't make it out anymore, then it would just sputter out and fall apart. And then, you know, just, you know, it'd disappear. You know, maybe some other people would start doing it.
But. I've given some foundation books away. I gave one away to this girl, and I don't think she really appreciated it. But if you get a hold of that Who Rules America... Mm-hmm. By Gene William Dumhoff. He wrote a lot of books. He wrote that other one up there. He wrote this book too. This is in depth. This is about how the foundations. You see, the foundations run this country. They were the ones that set up Social Security. Okay, state autonomy or class dominance. Case studies on policy making in America. That's another good book. And that shows you how. The foundations set up the Social Security and unemployment insurance. This is another good book. That's by G. William Dumhoff too. Mm-hmm. See, I got that book, that one there, yeah, from the public library. They sell them. They only keep them a year and then get rid of them. They get new books every year. And a librarian there years ago told me that was for sale, and he knew I was interested in it. And I bought it for $1.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good deal.
I say it is too.
So, this is interesting. And the like this, the state autonomy or class dominance. So you're saying that you know, the foundation set up Social Security. Like, why? I guess would that be beneficial?
They knew it was going to happen, so they wrote the law to please themselves. In other words, in the early days, workman's compensation. Went to for the North, but not the South. The farm workers were not included. In order for Roosevelt to get it passed, he needed the Southern Democratic votes. Then the South was Democratic. Okay? So he made a deal with them that they could exclude the farm workers from, not Social Security, but workmen's compensation. And they went along with it. The Northern workers got it, but the Southern workers, the farm workers, which were the majority workers of the South at the time,
yeah.
Didn't get it, okay? That was a deal they made, just like the deal they made withdrawing federal troops from the South at the end of Reconstruction.
Yeah.
That was another deal that they made. You know, it's involved, and I forget all the ramifications of all the details of it.
I remember that just being briefly covered, like, you know, during, like, history in school.
Yeah.
It's like the...
There was two parties running for office, and one wanted to get elected, and they promised if they got elected, they would withdraw the federal troops from the South.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how that came about.
Yeah.
Set civil rights back 100 years
until
Martin Luther King.
Yeah, and then, you know, still struggling with that sort of stuff today.
Right.
You know, I guess, so what is, I don't know. There's always been, I guess, this notion or idea of, like, the South, and, you know, because, you know, it started, you know, has its origins way back then.
What's that?
Or just, like, the, or one of the things I want to explore in my conversations with people is just picking apart this notion of the South and what exactly does that mean when, like, what ideas does that invoke when you mention just, like, the idea of the South? Because, like, you know, I've grown up here, you know, my whole life. I'm 25, and, like, I've never really felt, like, a lot of the customs and traditions that are, you know, qualified as, you know, Southern, like, I guess didn't really feel like they applied to me. And I've found a lot of people who have grown up here who feel the same way, like, they don't really feel Southern in that sense. So I'm wondering if that idea is... That identity is starting to fade into the you know, the greater social fabric.
Probably. I hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I hope so.
Because I mean, I've got you know, family members that you know, go on you know, holidays, and we have little reunions, and you know, a lot of the opinions I don't agree with, and I don't really feel comfortable.
What do they say?
Just. Like really backward stuff, like somebody had said something to my sister, like, you know, she needed to have more babies so that there would be like more white babies, and like I was like, how can I, you know, talk to this person if that's like the sort of jokes that they're gonna make? But then, you know, I feel like there's other people in my family who you know, don't feel that way, and you know, have separated themselves from that side of the family, so trying to get in touch with them.
Your opinion.
And then like, and even like between like me and my sister, there's like a big difference, because you know, I feel very strongly about these sort of things, and how yeah, it's like, you know, stupid to judge people off of these you know,
stereotypes. Things.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, hell, what was his name again? The Mind of the South.
Mind of the South.
Read that book. That was written by a Southerner. He was from the Piedmont area. What is that, North Carolina, South Carolina? His name was The Mind of the South. Read that book. He wrote it in 1940. It's terrific. One of the best books I ever read, The Mind of the South, who incidentally committed suicide in Mexico. Why he did, I don't know. He just wrote the book, and just had it published, and he committed suicide. I used to have it, but I don't think I have it anymore. The Mind of the South. The South has had some great authors.
Oh, yeah.
You know. H.L. Mencken. You know H.L. Mencken?
Mm-mm.
Look him up, H.L. Mencken. M-E-N-C-K-E-N. He was from Baltimore. He worked for the Baltimore Sun. He wrote a lot of books on the South. H.L. Mencken.
Cool.
And the other guy, Cash. Cash was the guy that wrote...
Mind of the South.
Mind of the South, Cash. C-A-S-H. I can't remember... He had initials, and I forget the initials.
I ought to be able to find out that.
Read that book. That'll blow your mind.
Oh, yeah, I'll be looking for it.
Okay.
And there's a book I read a while back called, like, Slavery by Another Name that looked into just, like, you know, during Reconstruction and then during the Industrial Revolution, how a lot of the freed slaves, you know, got turned over into these... you know, low-paying jobs, and you know, it's like they were, you know, being paid like factory script or whatever. And like, there's actually a friend of mine in Southside lives in some old historic, like, a, you know, their apartments now, but they used to be homes for miners. So yeah, you mentioned a little bit about like unions. Where do you stand on like unions?
Pro union, 100%.
And so I guess like. Historically, like, how do you think they, like, fit in and, like, I guess...
Well, we had a Labor Party came up, was started by unions, and for some reason it collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy that founded it, a guy by the name of Mazzocchi, he died. And right after that, I think the Labor Party, when they saw Obama go in, I don't know what happened. I don't really know what happened. but the party just collapsed. And then Occupy Wall Street, they collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything collapses. Every protest movement in this country collapses because they're bought out.
Mm-hmm.
They're bought out. Either they're shot and killed, or like my friend here says, Cornel West.
Oh, yeah.
That's his latest book, Black Prophet, Prophetic Fire.
Hmm.
That's his latest book, Black Prophetic Fire. Read that book. It's in the public library. There's 6 copies of the library. Black Prophetic Fire.
Because, again, going back to the South, like, I guess has been historically, like, anti-union, or, you know, got a lot of, right-to-work states.
Yeah, right-to-slave state. That's mm-hmm. what they call it, right-to-work state, is a right-to-slave state.
Yeah. And then what is it?
They scare the workers here, you know. If you don't toe the line, you get fired.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, in Wisconsin, they just made the right-to-work.
Right, it'll change. It goes back and forth.
Like, I thought it was, I guess, sort of interesting, like, for me, I worked for a small, local business out of Calera, and we would do, videography work.
What kind of work?
Just, videography. We would just video stuff, whatever we got, hired to go out and video. But it was mostly school sort of functions, but anyways, it's a small, just sort of under-the-radar sort of business, didn't really follow a lot of rules. There was a culture of there's a joke where if you fall from a ladder, then you're fired the moment you fall from the ladder. It's like by the time you hit the ground, you're no longer an employee, so they're not liable, was the joke there. And there's a lot of that sort of just joking about how this could be dangerous, or not really following the rules. And it wasn't until leaving that job and working at legitimate places, having to go through OSHA training, that I realized some of the stuff we were doing back then was really illegal, and my boss should not have been allowing that to happen, but he did. And so that made me feel a bit different about my relationship with them.
Without unions, workers have nothing.
Mm-hmm. So I guess I don't know. It's just frustrating that here in the South, for some reason, there's that idea that that unions are, the enemy in some way, that they're just another middleman trying to get in between you and your paycheck, whereas, I don't feel like that's the case.
I don't either.
And then I've been hearing about, a chapter of the IWW has been started here in Birmingham.
Yeah, I heard about it.
I haven't been able to make it out to any of the meetings.
Well, I wanted to go to one of them, but I couldn't. But anyway, Jeff's in it.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk to him about it.
Yeah.
Historically, do you know much about,
I know a little bit about the IWW, International Workers of the World.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're a good organization.
Yeah, I can remember, hearing a little bit. I think it must have been back in high school. I read Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, and hearing about, they were one of the most radical unions back in the day, and did a lot for the labor movement.
They were strong on the West Coast with the longshoremen,
the
lumber workers.
So, what is your, personal interactions with unions been like?
Good. I was a member of the union all my life.
Mm.
When I worked for the United States Lines,
mm-hmm.
I was a member of a union all my life. Well, all my working life, most of my work, except when I was in the Navy and except when I was in MSTS. But even MSTS had a union, even though it was military. We were civil servants.
Mm.
So we were a union there. I forget which union it was. I was a member of the Staff Officers Association of America, AFL-CIO.
Okay.
I was a purser pharmacist mate.
Oh, what is that?
Purser pharmacist mate.
Mm.
Like purser corpsman, but they call us pharmacist mates.
Okay.
Yeah, what else?
What do you think are some things that people should be looking into? What are, other than, foundations, or are there any specific foundations that should be looked into?
Well, they should look at the whole thing. I mean, buy G. William Dunbar's book, read about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only way you'll find out about it. He's got a lot of references there, a lot of bibliography. You know, read any one of the books in his bibliography.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the book, I'll show you.
Let's see, this one?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Read any of these books. I'm sure he's got a section here. Well, he hasn't got much of a bibliography, I'm afraid. Oh, he does it at the back of the books, yeah, okay. Back of each chapter.
Mm.
Read his notes. There's plenty of notes in here. Read any one of those books. Okay?
So, your suggestion would just
one of the
do
best
the
books,
research.
One of the best books I read was Philanthropy and Cultural Imperialism. Mm. Read that one. Philanthropy and Cultural Imperialism. That's a terrific book. It's a collection of essays by different professors, all academics. Philanthropy and Cultural Imperialism. I forget the editor of it, but anyway, that's the name. Get that book. That's terrific. Read Joan Roelof, Foundations in Public Policy. Joan Roelof, R-O-E-L-O-F-S, Foundations in Public Policy. I got that book. In fact, I talked to her many times on the phone.
So yeah, I think that's pretty much all the little notes that I have here.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
No, shut it off.
All right.
But both Obama and Michelle Obama were in foundations. They're big in foundations. One of them was in the Ohio S.A. Sprague Memorial Institute. Michelle Obama. That was her foundation. $276 million foundation. So they're all tied up with foundations. And Barack Obama was in the Woods Fund in Chicago. An $80 million foundation. You know, I tell you where all these books are.
Okay.
The foundation directory, if you want to go look this stuff up.
Yeah.
Go to the public library, the main public library, in the old library on the second floor in the government documents section.
Okay.
Even though these aren't government documents, they're put out by a private corporation. That's where they have them. On the second floor of the old library, government documents section. The librarian will show you where they are. If you want to look them up, if you want to look anything up. Okay?
Okay.
Kind of books people here don't read. They read, you know, they read crap. I shouldn't say it that way, but that's what I mean.
Well, most days, you know, a lot of people just aren't reading, period.
What they read is, you know, stuff on the South, and they love that kind of stuff. His name was W.J. Cash. W.J. Cash. Read that book. That's terrific. I won't read anything else beside that one. But anyway, that's where they are. Second floor of the old library.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
A little bit. I mean, I'm not too familiar with the library up here. I've been there a couple times, though.
The main public library.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we got the new public library, then across the street's the old library.
Okay.
They're connected by a walkway, you know.
Yeah.
They don't buy these kind of books down here, you know?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it.
No. That's why I have difficulty getting rid of them.
Mm-hmm. And it was like I was saying earlier, with, like, back in high school, I read, like, People's History of the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was just a book I, you know, picked up on my own because I thought it'd be interesting. And one day we had a substitute teacher in, and he saw I was reading that, and said that that was out of the ordinary, that he hadn't seen a student crack open a book like that on their own. So not very common.
Huh?
I was just seeing what it is. It's largest foundations.
Yeah, the 100 largest.
Well, I could just take a picture of this on my phone if you wanted to keep the original.
Yeah, if you want.
Sure.
We can take a copy of this, too. Take. Here. Okay, take this one here. This is Barack Obama. He was a member of this one, Woods Fund of Chicago. Can you take a picture of that?
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah. That's never come out that they were directors, like directors of the foundation, okay? Mm-hmm. It's never come out.
Hmm.
So you're one of the few people that knows about it, outside of foundation geeks. Well, all that foundation directory shit is online.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is go foundation directory on your computer, and you'll pull up everything.
Okay.
Unless you want to look at the library, they got all the books there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, like this will give me plenty of stuff to look into for the next, year or so at least.
On the way out to see Bob, I had to go down I-59 north of Birmingham a ways, and roads out there are not what, you see going down more maintained roads. There's some pretty big potholes, and it gets pretty rough in some areas, and I guess there's just not the kind of money needed to maintain roads out there, and gotta wonder why that is. So after my conversation with Bob, we went out for lunch, and we stopped by this little local barbecue joint. I can't recall the name of it right now, but it's somebody's name's barbecue. Pretty much every town's got something like that, and they all pretty much look the same on the inside. Covered with Southern memorabilia and patriotic memorabilia as well. And Bob, kind of pointed out that this is just the typical atmosphere of the South, he feels at least, and that, the kind of books that he gave me while I was at his place, aren't sold here because there's just no interest, nobody would read them. When we entered the restaurant, one of the staff members joked if we were going to see President Obama because, as a matter of fact, he was in town. He was in Birmingham that day, and I feel like this was obviously a lighthearted joke, as Bob's fairly open with some of his political opinion, and I believe this being a restaurant that he frequents, that the folks there would know his opinion, or at least the fact that he doesn't favor Democrats any more than he does Republicans, and so I don't know. Bob said something to me off tape that I feel kind of really sums things up in a good way. As much as he harps about the dangers of the foundations and just the general disillusionment of things and not liking the direction that this country's heading, he says that he still worries more about how he's going to get the grass cut than he does those things, because those are the things directly in front of them, or directly in front of him, and those are the things that he has a direct effect, those are the things that are within his power to change, so you gotta look at what's in front of you, and not lose sight of, where you are, and I felt like that's pretty important, and, after we left, after we left the restaurant, one of the restaurant staff came up to me and just told me to, let them know if anything ever happens to Bob, because they just, want to be kept in the loop, and I think that's, pretty important, because, they've got these, difference of opinions, politically and culturally, Bob and the other locals, but at the end of the day, they're still neighbors, and they act neighborly to one another, and, I think there's something about that, that works. So, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of Back to the Fire. Until next time, safe travels.